This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is the chairman of the White House Council of Economic Advisors, Dr. Jared Bernstein. He'll join us in a moment. First off, Dr. Daryl Peel, Oklahoma State livestock economist, says winter is playing a role.
Futures market, I think, has reacted a bit. Feeder cattle future, well, all of the both feeder and the live cattle, I think, are still kind of following through from last fall with, you know, trying to sort of consolidate a bottom after the big correction we had in the fourth quarter of last year. And we've seen some strength. They've actually looked a little bit stronger here lately. I think some of that short term due to these weather things, as well as, you know, longer term, we are kind of getting a little bit of a solid footing under this market. I think it'll be another, you know, again, in another few days, we'll probably have a better sense of sort of what the real direction of the market is.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, and we're joined today by Dr. Jared Bernstein. Dr. Bernstein is chair of the White House Council of Economic Advisors. Welcome back to the show.
It's great to be back with you, and you call me Jared, and I'll call you Tony.
That will work. Well, Jared, let's start with this then. General economy, I saw maybe some concerns, and I guess we're always going to have those who have concerns about the general economy. I mean, what's the same? We predict more recessions than we ever get. But when you look at the general economy today, what are you seeing?
Well, you're right. There's always concerns, but we've had a long period of smooth sailing when people said we would be in a recession by now. So we've certainly disproved those claims big time if you look at the current economy. I mean, 2023, 2.7 million jobs. That is a big jobs number for the year, over 14 million jobs since President Biden took office. And look, this kind of news keeps coming, and it's not an accident. If you have a strong labor market, easing inflation, two things we've seen in 23 as we head into 24, that means real pay is starting to grow. So paychecks, wages are beating prices now for many workers. That wasn't the case a year ago. And that's really important because that gives some wind in the sail of consumer spending, which has been quite strong. We just got a great retail sales report for December. We're also seeing consumer sentiment start to pick up. We got a great report today, a couple months in a row now, where we're seeing people's these positive trends starting to reach people's feelings about the economy in a way that they haven't before. So we're on a pretty positive path. There are always risks to the forecast, as you know, as well as anybody. But I like where we are.
Now, again, we could spend a lot of time looking in the rearview mirror at 23, but I think at this point, at least those in ag and rural areas may be looking towards 24. And, hey, what can we expect over the next 10, 12 months, even 18 as we roll into 25? Any ideas?
Yeah, sure. I mean, the unemployment rate has been below 4% for just about 2 years running. And I know many of our listeners are thinking about rural economies. We looked at the rural unemployment rate. It's actually about the lowest on record. It's somewhere around 3.5, 3.6%, which is about where the overall national average is. And rural tends to run a little cooler than that. So the fact that we've had great labor markets, job growth in rural America has been a good thing to see. Now, this story I just told you, this dynamic about where we have a strong labor market supporting strong consumer spending with inflation coming down and even some prices coming down, we expect that to continue. One reason is because we're trying to make that happen at the White House. President Biden recently talked about getting rid of or at least cutting in half excessive overdraft fees that banks charge. We're going after all the junk fees we can. We've aggressively lowered the cost of prescription drugs, whether it's insulin, cost of health coverage, putting a cap on drug expenditures for folks on Medicare. All of that helps reduce inflation as well as even reducing prices directly. So all of those are in play along with our investment agenda in areas of clean energy, chip production, and so we expect that momentum to carry us ahead this year.
Now, as I look at something that the Council of Economic Advisers puts together each year, and this is a report to the president, if you will, I noticed in there, there's a year in review and the years ahead, and obviously this is 10 months old at this point, but looking back at some of that, talking about real GDP growth in the long run, and that was mentioned in there. It's as if you've seen this coming for quite some time.
Well, sometimes you get the forecast right and sometimes you don't. And I just want to be very transparent that I've been on both sides of that equation. But I think that one of the things that President Biden has really stressed in a way that we've listened to is we want to maintain the great job market while easing inflationary pressures, while taking down prices as best we can. And that's not an easy thing to do. Most economists told us if you're inflation, you're going to have to accept slower GDP growth and higher unemployment. And this is not okay with this president because he's coming at this as a kitchen table issue on families like the one he grew up in. And so meeting his, as we talked about, you know, a year ago in the report you mentioned, meeting the president's goals meant maintaining these dynamics while easing up on prices. And the fact that that's occurred has been, you know, very positive to see. But prices are still too high in lots of areas. You're never out of the woods in this business. So we really have to build on the progress we've made thus far.
Now, I'm sure there are some areas where this is not the case, but when we talk about rural America and we see a sign by looking at the average age of the farmer, which is now into the late 50s, we're seeing an aging population. Does that factor into the equation, maybe the aging of Americans and rural economies as we move forward?
Very much so. We have to be mindful of the implications of an aging population on many levels. One is in terms of supporting our seniors, and they're some of the most important areas are, of course, going to be Medicare and Social Security. That takes us to our budget. We have a deep obligation at the president's behest to make sure those programs stay solvent, stay healthy, no benefit cuts, making sure people get the retirement support they need. Now, one of the things we've tried to do is significantly lower the cost of health care, and that has two benefits. It lowers the cost of prescription drugs, insulin, people spending hundreds of dollars a month on insulin, that's now capped at $35. Same thing with prescription drugs in terms of having a cap on there. That helps consumers save money, seniors in particular, but it also helps the budget. And that helps the sustainability of these important programs. Look, that said, in terms of the workforce, yes, we need our workforce to continue to improve its productivity. And thankfully, the numbers have been supportive there as well. But that's an important dynamic that you raise.
Well, finally, you and I've had the opportunity to talk about a wide variety of issues, whether it's infrastructure, supply chain constraints back during the pandemic, or just trade in general. And as we kind of wrap up here, as we're into the new year, what do you see as far as trade for the U.S. in 2024?
The idea, I think, here, or the goal here, and especially talking to a more, you know, agriculturally oriented audience like yours, Tony, is to make sure we continue to have robust exports. Now, for farmers, a lot of times that implies logistical issues. We know that back in 2021, we had massive supply chain snarl-ups. Farmers couldn't get their goods to market. That means they couldn't get them out of ports into the global economy. We worked very hard with the private sector to unsnarl those supply chains, and they have stayed unsnarled. Now, as we speak, and as you well know, there are conflicts going on in this world, serious geopolitical tensions. I'm talking Russia, Ukraine, and, of course, Israel, Hamas. And there's been activities in the Red Sea, and that has implications for supply chains as well. Thus far, that impact has been quite limited. So I think one of the most important things we can do to continue robust exporting of our agricultural goods is to keep those supply chains flowing, to avoid any of those kind of maritime parking lot situations that plagued us in 2021. And you know, that's very much a goal of ours because it's very consistent with downward pressure on inflation.
Well, Jared, it's always good to visit with you. Welcome to the new year, and hopefully you'll come back and see us soon.
It would be my pleasure. Always great talking to you.
Again, it's Dr. Jared Bernstein. He's chair of the Council of Economic Advisors at the White House on today's Agribusiness Report.
Countdown 24 is marching onward to Orlando, January 31st to February 2nd, 2024. Have your say in the future of the industry, network with fellow producers, or connect with friendly faces. Plus, the NCBA trade show will be on site with over 385,000 square feet of the latest and greatest in the cattle business to help your operation stay competitive and sustainable. Register today and learn more at convention.ncba.org.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
It's the Agribusiness Report. Dr. Darrell Peel is an Oklahoma State livestock economist.
Yeah, you know, it appears to me, just anecdotally, we don't have any data yet, but it appears that we've got a better wheat crop than we've had in several years, and we've got more cattle out on wheat, at least in what I saw in parts of Colorado and Oklahoma over the holiday period. And that seems to be the case. As I talk to producers, there's more stocker cattle out. So, you know, that's good. We've had the wheat. Now, this cold weather we've had recently certainly will stop the wheat growth, but we sort of expect that this time of the year. Whatever wheat we've got is what we've got to work with now for another, about 6 weeks or so. If we're doing dual purpose wheat where we're going to pull the cattle off by early March and then go ahead and harvest that wheat. And so, but I do think we have more stocker cattle out, and you know, some of those are heifers. So that may be where some of our potential replacement heifers come from. I suspect that those decisions have not been made in many cases yet. Those producers that maybe they bought the heifers from the cow-calf producers who sold them, but they're still out there as stocker cattle. They still could wind up being replacement heifers before it's all over with.
Now, speaking of wheat, Russian wheat exports have become more diversified through the first half of this year compared to the same period of the previous year. Indicates, according to Fast Markets AgriCensus, that the country has retaken its status as the cheapest origin globally, while concerns over potential sanctions have dwindled. Shift in export destinations has also driven the price competitiveness of Russian supplies. It's the Agribusiness Report.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today from the White House, Dr. Jared Bernstein.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the Seal of Cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the Seal of Cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members. Our strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
For beef packing and processing facilities, in particular those of a small size scale, interested in participating in USDA's remote beef grading pilot program.
There's going to be a webinar that explains this new program on January 25th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Mountain Time.
Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack with the announcement Friday, as he revealed the new pilot program during a session at the National Western Stock Show in Denver, Colorado. More information about the pilot program and the webinar is available online at www.ams.usda.gov/services/remote-beef-grading. The secretary noted the importance of expanded access to fee-based voluntary grading services for smaller facilities to increase the value-added component of their products.
It turns out that if you can put that choice label on it, you might be able to get $300 more for that carcass than you would otherwise get.
I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.